The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Coming to you live from the studio in the WGBB studio in West Babylon, New York. This is hour two of tonight's Sports Talk 1240 radio program. Andrew Joseph, Eric Getzoff with you for the full hour here on Sports Talk 1240 and WGBB. Hope everyone's having a wonderful night. Eric, how you doing?
Andrew, I'm doing fantastic. Selection Sunday today. We got March Madness coming up Thursday to Sunday. It's the best time of year, in my opinion, especially after that crappy February, so I'm doing great.
And it's been I would say the last year in New York sports was not very thrilling. And so far, a very, very good start to the year 2015 with the hockey, not so much with the basketball. But we'll get into the March Madness and Selection Sunday. We'll get into the Giants offseason. And the Jets offseason, as they have made a lot of moves, and we'll touch on the Yankees and something that Mark Teixeira has said recently that...
Andrew, and just going back to your point about the Jets this offseason, is it crazy to say that the Jets have won the offseason out of every single team in football?
It's not crazy, but as we all know, winning the offseason doesn't necessarily relate to winning the season.
And with the Jets, all they want to do is probably win in the offseason and all... what's the owner's name?
Woody Johnson.
Yeah, all Woody Johnson wants to do is win the newspaper, the front page and the back page also. So, to him, it's a win. I still think that they've had the best season in the NFL, but again, all that matters is September to December, so we'll see what happens, come the 2015 NFL season.
I agree. Let's start with Selection Sunday, though. I was driving in, I missed the Selection show, but I've gotten all caught up on this, Eric. Let's start on what your thoughts are on how the committee did and on the seedings overall in this field. What do you think?
Number one seeds, I thought they got all four of them right. Obviously, Kentucky's the clear-cut number one overall, undefeated. Villanova played unbelievable this year, only two losses in a tough Big East. They also won the Big East tournament, which the selection committee takes a lot of stock into the tournaments because, especially with Duke. Yeah, Duke got a number one seed. I think that if Duke lost a round earlier, though, they may have been knocked out from a number one seed because the tournament wants to see these teams actually care about the tournament, the conference tournaments. So, for instance, Wisconsin and Duke, they didn't need to win their conference tournament, but the selection committee, the NCAA, they want to take those tournaments seriously. So there was a lot of stock in that for Villanova. They got the number one seed because they won the Big East tournament, I think, because of that. Duke, unbelievable team this year, Jahlil Okafor. I think that they're the second-best team in the tournament.
I agree.
And Wisconsin's amazing with Frank Kaminsky. Wisconsin, as a team, they don't turn the ball over that much. They play as a team together. I love watching them play. I thought the committee got all four number one seeds correct.
I agree. I definitely agree. I think the one seeds, when we look at Kentucky, because I'm going to start with Kentucky, and obviously undefeated season. They're going for history. The question I have about Kentucky for you, Eric, and I'll give you my opinion, is does the undefeated season and the history that they're going after, does that actually – negatively impact this run for them? Do they feel more added pressure because of the undefeated season? And do you think they were better off maybe losing a game?
I think that's a very fair point. I would agree with you. I would say that it's better off for Kentucky had they lost the game, because now the media, the pressure's all over them, and I don't think it's going to affect them because I think John Calipari is that good of a coach that he's going to keep them focused and that he's going to – Kentucky, the players are not even going to think like that. But, however, I feel like it would be different for Kentucky and for Calipari also if they lost the game and they knew the feeling of what it was like losing, you know what I mean? Because then if you lose that game, you come back the next game and you win, and it's kind of a different feeling. And I remember when the New England Patriots went undefeated in 2007. Obviously, they were 18-0. They played the Giants in the Super Bowl. They lost. I remember a lot of people were saying it was almost better off if the Patriots went 15-1 that season, so they knew what a loss was like. They knew what it felt like. I don't think it's going to impact Kentucky this year that much, but if I'm a Kentucky fan, I think I would have rather them lost the game instead of going undefeated.
I agree. I mean, on one hand, we're both not Kentucky fans, but looking at it from an objective standpoint, it's easy for us to say, look, the pressure of the undefeated season is there. If they have lost a game, they would have had they would have understand that loss. Maybe they'd be even hungrier. Not to say that they're not hungry. Obviously, they're hungry. But, I mean, and I think that analogy with the New England Patriots is perfect because, you know, I think we all saw it that the Patriots, it was just week after week the pressure to keep that undefeated season alive. It's not even that. You know, they didn't understand what a loss was like, but the Patriots were in a position where they never had that moment where they can relax. Okay, it was just so intense week in and week out, and eventually it got the best of them.
I can't think of on the top of my head right now the last undefeated team in NCAA basketball to go into the tournament undefeated and then lose. I don't know off the top of my head if there was one. If you do know, feel free to call in. I would love to speak with you. Obviously, if you got any questions, 631-888-8811. Once again, 631-888-8811. The last team to go undefeated, obviously, in the regular season and then the tournament was Indiana Hoosiers back in 1976, Bobby Knight's team. So, that was almost 40 years ago. So there's a reason. 75, 76 team, yeah. So, Bobby Knight won three tournaments with Indiana. That was his first one. There's a reason why a lot of teams, can't go undefeated and don't, but Calipari is such a good coach. And all of these players are freshmen too. They don't have that much experience.
Except the Harrison
twins. Yeah. That's it. Willie Cauley-Stein, Karl Anthony Towns. First off, those guys are amazing and they're going to go in the top five in the NBA draft. Mm-hmm. Both of them don't average over 10 points a game. And that's not a testament. That's not an under testament to themselves. It's a testament to Kentucky because anyone on that team can score.
They have, you know, the starting five, you know, plays a bad a couple minutes. Calipari goes to the next five. That's five more NBA talented players. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I would say the 10th guy on Kentucky could probably start on maybe any other NCAA tournament team. It's insane the depth.
In terms of talent, it might be the best team ever. In terms of, I wouldn't call them the best team ever because they don't have the chemistry that maybe that UCLA team that played together for four straight years had. But in terms of pure talent, this is probably the best team, college basketball team ever.
Eric Getzoff, Andrew Joseph, WGBB, Sports Talk 1240. I was watching Kentucky play today. Them on defense, it's amazing. I never saw the New York Knicks play in the 1990s, and I'm not comparing it to them, but I've heard stories of how it was impossible to get a layup on those Knicks teams. I was watching this Kentucky team, and they're not as physical as the 1990s Knicks teams with Anthony Mason, rest in peace, with Charles Oakley, with Patrick Ewing, but you can't get a layup off this team. You have 2 7-footers in Willie Cauley-Stein and Karl Anthony Towns. It's impossible. They block every single shot. Anyone can score. They can hit the three-pointer, the fast break, the half court. I'm not really a Kentucky fan. I'm not the biggest John Calipari fan. I think he's a little bit too egotistical. But there's nothing wrong with this Kentucky Wildcats team. They do everything right.
Without a question. Now, that being said, if you have to pick a team that's going to knock off Kentucky, who are you picking? You don't even have to give me one. Give me two or three teams that have the best chance at knocking off Kentucky.
I know who you're taking.
Yeah, I'm taking Duke.
I thought it was Iowa State.
Oh, you know what?
Yeah.
The thing is, here's the thing with Iowa State. All season long, I was going to pick Duke to beat Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
Then I saw the bracket came out, and Iowa State plays Duke.
So you can't go both, obviously,
and
right?
I'm not – it's so close. I don't think Iowa State would beat Kentucky, but at the same time, I think if Duke gets past Iowa State, I think they have in my opinion, they have the best chance to beat Kentucky out of every team in the bracket. That being said, I'm very concerned about that game against Iowa State for Duke.
Mm-hmm. Who do you give the better chance to with Duke-Iowa State?
What do you mean?
If Duke plays Iowa State, they're in the same bracket.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm probably going to go with Duke, but it's very close. Iowa State is one of the best teams in the country, and I think they match up well against Duke. It'll be tough. And going back to Kentucky, another team I think has a good chance, and I wonder if you agree, is Wisconsin. And I know we were talking before the show about Kaminsky and Decker. This Wisconsin team, they are a terrific team.
Mm-hmm.
They have played so well down the stretch here to earn themselves the number one seed. Do you agree that they have a legitimate chance at playing Kentucky? Because they'd match up in the Elite Eight, I believe, right?
It would be the Final Four.
Oh, it'd be the Final Four. Yeah, oh, yeah, so Final Four. Yeah, my mistake. Yeah, Final Four.
The reason why I like Wisconsin, too, they're experienced. Frank Kaminsky is a senior. He's been through, I think this is his fourth tournament appearance. They were in the Final Four last year. They got knocked off by, I think it was, they played Kentucky last year. Was that it in the Final Four? Or they played UConn? No, I'm sorry. They made the Elite Eight last year.
They lost in the Elite Eight?
Yeah, I think they lost in the Elite Eight. It was the Elite Eight or the Final Four, one of the two. But Wisconsin's experienced team, they've been there before. Bo Ryan is a veteran coach. He knows how to get the job done. I like this Wisconsin team. And as I was saying before, they don't make any mistakes. They rarely turn the ball over, and they have a lot of guys who can score. Of course, you got the National Player of the Year, Frank Kaminsky, Sam Decker, Nigel Hayes. They're getting Trayvon Jackson back, so they have a lot of depth at Wisconsin. They're experienced. They're my number two team. And now here's my question to you. And I want to get all of everyone's input on this as well. Give a call in 631-888-8811, 631-888-8811. Is it fun to pick Kentucky this year? Because everyone's going to be picking them. I mean, I just feel like you got to take someone else because everyone's going to be taking Kentucky.
If you're winning money, it's fun. Yeah, no, right. if you get the rest of the bracket correct and you lose because you don't pick Kentucky, then it's really, really not fun.
Right.
But I understand what you're saying. No, I do. It's like there's that kind of that urge to just pick someone else. Pick Duke. Uh-huh. Pick Wisconsin. Pick Villanova. Pick Virginia or whoever it is. I mean, pick someone else to beat Kentucky because they are – I mean, we've had favorites. They are the number one overall seed, but – this is unlike something we've seen in recent history. I mean, this is not even close. I mean, we have talked about this already early in this program, how amazing Kentucky is.
Yeah.
So I personally feel that urge. I felt that all season to I'm always that person that feels that need to pick against that team. So
absolutely.
I'm going to pick against Kentucky. I'm just not sure who I'm going to pick right now, but probably Duke.
Also, for as long as I've been following college hoops and as long as I've been following March Madness, I'm 22 now. I probably really started getting into it when I was 12 years old, 12, 11. Again, going back to your point, I've never followed college basketball when there's been such a clear-cut favorite as Kentucky. And you can look at it at two different angles. One, it makes it fun because everyone's after Kentucky. Of course, if this was, let's say, Utah or Georgetown, there's not as much national media and as much national hype following them as it would be Kentucky, which makes it fun. But then again, you look at it the other angle and say, they're such a clear-cut favorite, are they just going to blow everyone out? And is every single Kentucky game just not going to be fun? So it depends what viewpoint you look at it from. I look at it the viewpoint, I'm always the optimist. I think it's fun. Kentucky is so good that it's so fun watching them play because
they
can win so many different ways.
It's fun. I mean, they're just so exciting, and you mentioned it a couple minutes ago about their defense and Willie Cauley-Stein and Carl Anthony Towns. I mean, you go to the rim and you are going to get blocked.
Yep.
And it's just and the thing is, most teams that play great defense, say Virginia, they have trouble scoring, but not Kentucky, not at all.
Not at all. And only two players average over 10 points per game. Aaron Harrison, Devin Booker, and then they got guys like Dakari Johnson, who's averaging 6.7 points a game, grabbing down 5 rebounds. So it's also the great point about Kentucky. You have, 8 guys averaging over 20 minutes per game. So as going back to your point, they're so deep that if one guy's having a bad game, Kyle Perry is just going to be like, okay, I'll go to my bench. I'll grab someone else.
Yeah,
it's unprecedented.
By the way, we were talking about it before. Wisconsin lost in the Final Four last year to Kentucky.
That was it. Okay.
Yeah.
So that would be pretty cool if they got some revenge against them in the Final Four again.
That would be great.
And that game would be in Indianapolis, which is where – I also like – I know this is kind of random. I kind of like the sites where the Elite Eight, the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight games are. They're in Cleveland, Syracuse, Houston, and L.A. I just feel like – I don't know. Being in L.A., having the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight there, it's pretty cool.
Wasn't – last year, one of them was the Final Four or the Elite Eight in
at the Garden.
It was at the Garden last
year.
That
was the second, the third and fourth rounds.
Oh, the third and fourth rounds.
Elite Eight, yeah. So, it was the first time I was at the Garden, I think, since the 60s or 70s. But I mean, putting in Syracuse, obviously we all know what happened with the Orange this year. I was actually looking at a lot of the teams that were slated to, a lot of the experts were predicting to have good seasons next year. Syracuse, a lot of people were saying that Syracuse, is supposed to be getting a lot of high recruits. So next year should be a lot different for the Orange. If you're a Syracuse Orange fan down here living in Long Island.
I have a question for you, and this is, I mentioned this about a month or two ago to one of my close friends. And I haven't heard it from anyone. Maybe, I mean, I'm sure someone has said it somewhere. I'm not the only one, but I haven't heard it. Kentucky all season long has played this A lineup and this B lineup, where they have their starters, all five come out, and they bring all the next five in. My question, and so they have this, could be, and obviously they have this great depth, and so everyone's well-rested.
It's like hockey with the shifts.
Exactly. Everyone's well-rested throughout the game. Now, my question is, and this is kind of a skeptical question based on not much other than just maybe me thinking really maybe even too hard about this. But in a big game, say against Duke, say against Wisconsin, down the stretch when Wisconsin has their stars, they have Kaminsky, they have Decker, they have Hayes, Duke has Okafor, they have Cook, they have Jones, and Winslow. Kentucky's going to want to match up with their best players, and late in the game in a close game. Mm-hmm. Will they be prepared? Will they, given the fact that they won't be used to those kind of minutes and those kind of pressure minutes, but specifically those big minutes all season long, will they be physically and mentally capable of dealing with the extra minutes that they haven't dealt with all season long?
Yeah, I think so. And this goes back to my point about their head coach, Cal Perry. I'm not a big fan of him, but he does such a good job getting these guys prepared every single game. I'm sure during practice, he's drilled them pretty hard. Mm-hmm. I'm sure even during games, I mean, you make a good point because it's not really like they've had a lot of close games at the end of games. Really, I don't think there's been many of their games that have been within 2-3 points. So, yeah, if they're in a tight situation, it's going to be very new for these players, especially because most of them are freshmen and sophomores. But then again, I think that they'll be fine. So, I think they'll be fine going into the tournament in pressure situations.
Yeah, I mean, I was just asking, and I think that's right. A good answer. Yeah, no. By the way, they played – they had a two-game stretch where they played Ole Miss and they went to overtime, and then the next game they played Texas A&M and they went to double overtime before they won that game. So they have seen, but those, I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, and you're talking about games where they're winning by 50 points. I mean, like these games aren't close basketball games at all. But there were those two games, and I believe one of the games against LSU. Yeah, they beat LSU 71-69. So they have been tested a little bit. But for the most part, it's been a walk in the park for Kentucky all season.
And Kentucky has been blowing teams out. One team that they blew out tremendously this season, especially in the first half, I think you know where I'm going with this, UCLA.
Oh, yeah. Who made the tournament?
How they got in, I have no clue. And I'm a Temple Owl fan. I went to Temple University. According to the guy who, I guess, runs the selection committee, Temple was the first team out. And so, I mean, I didn't think that Temple really deserved to be in, but one team that that got in that I don't think deserves to be in, and that a lot of people don't think, also is UCLA.
I agree.
They really don't have that many good wins. The only two big wins that they have, home to Utah and home to Oregon. They lost both times in Arizona. They didn't go that far in the Pac-12 tournament. I just don't see how this team got into the NCAA. They were 20-13 in the Pac-12. They were fourth in the Pac-12, which was not a strong conference at all this year. To me, it was amazing because usually the selection committee is not right all the time, but this time they were far from right.
I agree. I don't understand the UCLA. I don't know if it's a ratings thing with them because it's a big school. Big basketball school, but they will play SMU, who's coached by Larry Brown.
Yeah, so I hope Larry Brown absolutely destroys them because UCLA does not deserve to be in the tournament this year. And going back to SMU, SMU is a very good team this year.
They are.
Yeah, Temple was up by 2 points against them in the American semifinals, and SMU just had an unbelievable second half. And then they had scored Temple by 15, and they have a senior point guard. His name is flying by my head right now, but he leads that team. Of course, Larry Brown does a great job. So, yeah, SMU is a 6 seed, correct? Yeah, SMU is a 6 seed in the bottom right bracket. They're playing UCLA. And then they play the Iowa State. Next game, so I'll be thinking of you with Iowa State this year.
Iowa State's a great team. They really are, and they are really pushing me to even consider having Duke fall to them.
Another question that I have for you, actually.
Yeah.
So you know how they have 4 playing games for the NCAA tournament?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
I just don't understand why for some of the brackets, for some of the regions, the playing games are the 16 seeds. And the others, they're the 11 seeds.
I've been wondering that for a long time now.
Right? If you're the last 4 in, that means you should be a 16 seed. And if you're the playing game should be played by the last 4 in. It doesn't make any sense.
I've never understood that.
I just don't get it. It blows by my head. maybe it's some crazy thing that the NCAA does, one of the many crazy things. But
no, I don't understand it.
It makes no sense.
So, Eric, you want to get... You going to give everyone your Final Four picks and championship picks?
Yeah, let's do that right now, actually. So in my bottom left, I'm going to go Wisconsin. Again, I've been all over them the entire show. I love Frank Kaminsky. The way they play is amazing to me. The bottom right, I think, is the weakest bracket, but I just don't see Duke being that great this year. They're a good team, yeah. I think they're too young, too inexperienced. I'm going to go with Iowa State, especially with those 4 comebacks in a row. In the Big 12 championship game, they came back from 15 down. They're great for me. And then I'm going to go with 2 number one seeds. People may not like it. I don't like doing that all the time. But I think Villanova's too strong. And then, of course, I just think Kentucky's too good. And I'm going to go Kentucky against Iowa State in the championship game. I'm going Kentucky to win it all. But then again, it's Sunday night at 9:26. I'm sure I'll change my pick many
times. Oh, yeah, of course. You know, when you handwrite it, you cross it off. Everything's crossed off.
Of course.
I mean, I don't know who handwrites it anymore. But so maybe you do.
I do, actually, sometimes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, use a whole bottle of Whiteout, print it out like 50 times, and probably like Thursday at 11 a.m. I'll get my final version in. But, Andrew, who do you got for your Final Four and for your championship?
Well, I definitely agree with Kentucky and Wisconsin on that left side. I think Wisconsin to me, we've talked about it. I love them as a team. I think they have a legitimate chance to be Kentucky in that matchup. Although I'm going to pick Kentucky, I'm going to have Kentucky go to the championship. On the other side, I'm going to pick Duke. As of now, I think I'm going to have Duke over Iowa State, make the Final Four. Uh-huh. And I'm actually going to have Villanova fall to Virginia. And the thing that worries me about Virginia is that they have, at times, a real inability to just put the ball in the basket.
Yep.
But I like their defense. They don't turn the ball over very much. And I'm just going – there's not much to it other than a gut feeling. I'm just going to go with Virginia. And then I'm going to have Duke and Kentucky in the championship, and I'm going to pick Duke.
All right.
But it's not really because I think Duke's better. I mean, absolutely, Kentucky's a much better team. But I just think – I'm just thinking in a gut feeling for this one night, Duke's going to be better.
Hey, go for it. The one thing – I like Virginia too. The one thing that scares me about Virginia is that they're playing – they would be playing Michigan State in the second round if they were to beat Georgia, mm-hmm. obviously. And Michigan State's not a great team this year, but Michigan State in the championship – they always scare me.
And they just played Wisconsin really tough.
They did. They played horrible in overtime. Guy outscored 11-0. But
The overtime.
Yeah, I mean, even taking Wisconsin to overtime in the championship game when Michigan State's not ranked and Wisconsin's one of the best teams in the nation just shows you how good Michigan State can be in clutch situations.
This time of year, I completely agree. You always have to consider them.
Of course, Michigan State's always – same thing with UConn. I mean, how great would it have been if UConn beat SMU?
If UConn made a tournament – at that point, it's almost as if you have a situation where if UConn was in the tournament, you have to consider picking them to win at least one game, if not more.
Death, taxes, and UConn in March.
I mean
– those are 3 inevitables.
Oh, well, not this year.
Yeah, not this year, but for most years.
Yes.
So we're going to take a quick break here on WGBB Sports Talk 1240. Eric Getzoff and Andrew Joseph, when we come back, we'll talk some NFL, the Giants offseason, the Jets offseason, and the New York Yankees. Spring training is underway. Opening day right around the corner. We'll get you all caught up and preview the MLB season. We'll be right back.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB, or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you can find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA, or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, ride share, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
Welcome back to the program, Sports Talk 1240. Eric Getzoff, Andrew Joseph with you, going strong until 10. So we started off the program with March Madness here on Selection Sunday, and we now move over to NFL free agency, the NFL offseason overall, and we'll go over the Giants. Eric, you're a diehard Giants fan, so what are your impressions of this offseason so far? I know, obviously, the big move, Shane Vereen in, JPP, they franchised him, a lot of money counting against the cap by doing that. Mm-hmm. They bring in a couple linebackers, JT Thomas, Jonathan Casillas. They bring in wide receiver Dwayne Harris, who I honestly don't know much about.
Dallas.
Yeah, Kiwan Nuker was released. Obviously, Antrel Roll's gone, one of the leaders of this team for the last few years. What are your impressions? Have they done enough? And what do you see them doing going forward?
I mean, I would have liked them to get an offensive lineman, but then again, they have the number 9 pick in the draft, so... you know, if they want to grab an offensive lineman, then I'm completely fine with it. There really weren't many offensive linemen out there. They weren't going to give Mike Iupata from San Francisco the contract that Arizona.
Oh no, he got crazy money.
Yeah, it was too much. The JPP franchise tag, I'm fine with. I didn't want to let him walk because we still don't know if he's fully capable of doing what he did in 2011 and even parts of 2012. And I didn't want to re-sign him also to a massive deal because then again, he could be the player that he was last season and for the first part of this season too. So I'm fine with franchise tagging him, giving him, what, like $10 to $12 million, proving himself for one more season, and then either letting him go or re-signing him next year. So I'm fine with that. Antrel Roll, I would have liked to re-sign him. I know that he's a little bit older. I think he's like 32, 33. However, age really isn't a factor to me with Roll because – he played for the Giants for 5 seasons. He had injuries. He went through injuries, but he played every single game for the Giants. He was a leader in the locker room. He was a good safety. But then again, the Bears offered him a contract that the Giants didn't want to match, so I was okay with that. Overall, for the Giants offseason, I give them a B. Yeah, it's okay, but you know, let's see what else they can do. Let's see how the draft goes, and I'll be able to judge it better off, I would say, come June.
One guy that I look at for the Giants on that offensive line in the draft, his name is DJ Humphreys from Florida.
Okay.
Now, look, I'm not a big college football fan. I'm mainly into the NFL. And even if I was to watch a college football game here and there, I can't tell you who the great offensive linemen are at the college level.
Right.
But
unless
that,
you hear their name on like ESPN.
Exactly.
Or something,
of course. Head. Exactly. That being said, I've seen a few mock drafts. This guy from Florida, DJ Humphreys, being a guy, he's a tackle that the Giants may target at number 9. Look, I think we would both agree that the Giants could go either way in terms of the defensive line or the offensive line, where last year they didn't get to the quarterback enough, they weren't very good against the run, and they weren't great at blocking.
No.
So two really important things on a football team. So they can go either way. If you were to choose defensive line or offensive line, which one would you go with?
Offensive line. You have to give Eli Manning. There were a couple games last year. Specifically, the game that comes to my mind is the Eagle game on Sunday Night Football, where Eli just got absolutely clobbered.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't have a chance to throw the ball. And it wasn't even just Eli Manning being able to pass the ball. It was the running game. The run blocking was horrible from the team last year as well. So I think that obviously offensive line is a big foundation for any football team. Defensive lineman is crucial as well. But then again, you still have JPP. We don't know if he's capable of doing exactly what he did in 2011 and 2012. Also, last offseason, Hankins had a pretty good year. But then again, yeah, to answer your question, I would go offensive lineman. Andrew, I know you're a Jet fan, but considering that the situation that the Giants are in, I'm going to ask you the same question. What would you rather the Giants do in the draft, offensive line or defensive line?
I mean, I think I go with like the ridiculous easy answer and just say get the best player out of those two. But if I had to say, I think offensive line. I agree with you. I think offensive line is a little more important because I think Eli. Look. We can agree, Eli is a very good quarterback, but he's not Aaron Rodgers. He's not going to escape.
Yeah, he needs a line.
Yeah, he needs a line. He needs a line. Not that every quarterback needs. Aaron Rodgers needs a line also, but I think the offensive line, going back to last season, I think that was more of a weakness than the defensive line.
I would definitely agree.
And they have JPP back, so. Really, it'd be great if they could address both, either trade, free agency, and the draft. Maybe they will. I mean, they still have about $7 million in cap space left.
Yeah. And I think that they still have moves to make in terms of trades also. Let's say they get an offensive lineman in round one, get a defensive lineman in round two, even move up. Late in round one, grab a defensive lineman. But I think those are the two specific needs that the Giants have this year. And also, you got to factor in safety, too. They just lost Antrell Roll. Who's their starting safety now? I don't think there's anyone on this team that really is capable of taking Antrell Roll's role in terms of safety. I mean, Quinton Demps, you want him to be the full-time safety? I don't think so. So you also got to fill Antrell Roll's spot. It's something that the Giants have to consider.
They have some holes. They have some holes, definitely.
They do. And Jerry Reese is going to have to – he hasn't done a great job the past couple of years. He really hasn't. People actually are starting to realize this a lot more now than in the past couple of years. But Jerry Reese is he has not done that great a job the past couple of years.
No, he hasn't. And, we'll see if he can get creative here without that much cow space left. A lot of it's going to depend on making a good draft pick. But – the core of the Giants team, I think we can agree, the core is very strong. Obviously, Eli, Odell Beckham Jr., you got a core there. Odell Beckham Jr., obviously, one of the most explosive players in the league. I think we could agree that, and with Victor Cruz coming back, that the passing game should be really good.
And I think that the Giants are capable of having a very, very explosive offense.
I agree.
And the only way I would say that is if Victor Cruz comes back fully healthy, because just having Eli Manning and Odell Beckham Jr., even though they were great last year in the second half of the season, just having those two doesn't make them that explosive. You need that extra receiver.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in the slot, that would be great.
Of course.
Definitely.
If you have Cruz and Beckham as your 1 and 2, Manning's going to have a lot of fun this season, I'll tell you that.
I agree. I think he'd be a very good fantasy pickup late in the draft.
Of course.
Because he's going to have some weapons to throw the ball to. But
and not to mention also, going back to that Eli Manning point, a lot of people don't realize this. And I'll follow my friends all the time who really aren't big-time Giant fans. Eli Manning, you look at his stats from last year, he had a pretty good year.
Oh, he did, definitely.
If you take – obviously, you can't take away two games, so I'm going to take back that statement. But The only two bad games he had last year was week one against the Lions when the Giants still needed time to mesh. He threw three interceptions, wasn't that good. And then the game is against the 49ers where he threw five interceptions.
Oh, yeah, he was really bad that game.
Yeah, it was bad.
That was the worst I've seen him in a long time.
If you look at his stats, and obviously you have to watch how he played on the field this season, which he played pretty good in my opinion. I mean, 30 touchdowns, 14 interceptions, over 4,400 yards, and a completion percentage of 63.1. I would say his second best year of his career. So, I mean, Manning, even though he's been in the league for, I think, what is it now, his ninth or tenth season, he still has it.
Oh, without a question. I as a Giants fan, which I'm not, I wouldn't worry about their offense. I'd worry about the defense right now, which has a lot of holes, and they really need to improve that defense. And like you said, who's replacing Antrell Roll, not only on the field but in the leadership department?
Absolutely. I think – and I don't know if Jason Pierre-Paul is really capable of that. He's not really that much of an outspoken leader. And I know you're not going to factor this in that much, but Antrell Roll always did those radio spots on WFAN. And I think that brought some sort of leadership to him where people went to him and, you know, he was outspoken about the team, always backed up the team. Pierre-Paul really doesn't do that much. I guess if you want to look at Prince Mukamara as a guy who could, step up in that kind of role. But then again, he's a free agent after this season, so they got to address that contract, you know, maybe during the season or next offseason. But yeah, Antrell Roll, it's a really big hole to fill.
It really is. And let's switch over to the other side of
the other side.
Literally the other side of the same stadium.
Yeah.
I guess the other locker room, right?
Florham Park. We'll go from Albany to Florham Park, or Albany to Cortland.
Cortland.
Yeah.
The Jets. So we mentioned it, or you mentioned it earlier in the open briefly. The big splashes that in your opinion, they've won the offseason, which I agree with. I think the Jets have had a wonderful offseason, and I think they've gone from a really bad team last year to, on paper, a really good team with a bad quarterback situation.
Yeah, the quarterback situation I would disagree with, though, because if last year was bad, which, you know, what would you consider last year, though? Like, horrible?
I would consider last year something that can never happen again.
I mean, right.
Gino was so bad.
Yeah, there were – and I was talking with my buddy last night about this. There were two games last year that literally the Jets couldn't win the game. And with Geno Smith as quarterback, no matter what he did. And the two games were home against Buffalo and in San Diego. And Geno Smith, if he touched the ball in that game, even if he handed the ball off to a running back, the Jets were not winning that game. Geno, listen, he can't be the quarterback next season. If the Jets didn't improve on defense, let's say they substitute Geno Smith for Ryan Fitzpatrick, I think they can improve by three wins right there.
Fitzpatrick's better than Geno, but he also commits a lot of turnovers, throws a lot of interceptions, and when he's on, he's very good. But there's a reason why he has gone from team to team. There's a reason why he's not on the Texans anymore, and even though they don't have a stable quarterback situation there. So there's a lot to worry about.
But then again, who else would you have wanted this offseason if you're they weren't in a great situation to get a quarterback?
No, they're not at all. And sadly, they didn't get the first overall pick. They won a little bit too much down the stretch. And
I feel like that's almost better for the Jets because then there would have been a lot of pressure for them to take Winston, and they're like, no one would have wanted that to happen.
What could the Jets – I mean, here's the thing. Do you if Mariota falls to the Jets at six, because I'm of the belief that if they were the first overall pick, which is really – it really is kind of a worthless point to make. But I think Winston would have been the guy they would have picked, and I think it would have been the right pick, even if it doesn't work out. But the fact is that they had the number six pick. If Mariota falls, which honestly I have no idea. I know the Redskins, there's been rumors that they would take him. I don't know if I believe that. I think the Titans would be more realistic. But let's just say hypothetically, Eric, Mariota falls to the Jets. Do you take Mariota?
Yeah, I can't. I don't think you can let him pass you by. I mean, look at what. I mean, it's tough because I'm not really an NFL draft expert. I can't look at Mariota and say this guy is going to be good in the NFL. He played a different style of offense in college, but he's not going to be good in the NFL. I don't know that. I'm not an expert. So it's kind of hard for me to answer that question from like an expert's analysis. But seeing the way that Mariota played last year, seeing how good he was against Florida State, and seeing where the Jets are with their quarterback situation, I don't think you can let him pass you by. And now, if a situation came up where Mariota was on the board at number six and it's the Jets draft pick, I think you call up the Eagles and say, hey, Eagles, hey, Chip Kelly, what are you sending over? I'm all ears. Because if the Eagles are going to offer you a package of first-round picks, second-round picks, maybe even Sam Bradford as well, I think the Jets really have to consider that option tremendously and pull the trigger on that kind of trade, especially if they don't want to take the chance getting Marcus Mariota, and if he's not a franchise quarterback, then they waste their number one pick. Play it safe and see what the Eagles have to offer.
I completely agree. And when it comes to Mariota, though, say the Eagles are not willing to offer maybe this year's first-round pick, next year's first-round pick, who knows what else.
Yeah.
If you take Mariota, and I think it would be the kind of situation where it would be assumed that he wouldn't start his first year, which would make sense because Fitzpatrick is signed for 1 year at like $3 million, a little over $3 million. So Mariota could sit, watch, and learn from Fitzpatrick, which I guess you could argue is a good thing or a bad thing.
It's not like Aaron Rodgers or Brett Favre.
Yeah. No, it's not at all. And then maybe play next year, or at least compete for the position next year. I just think that with all these moves the Jets made, they just brought in Revis, they brought back Cromartie, they brought in Buster Skron, they brought in Marcus Gilchrist to safety. They obviously traded for Brandon Marshall. It almost seems like the Jets have just turned their franchise into a win now team. Now you could say, well, a lot of these players, and you know, you have Revis, he's not very old. Marshall probably towards the end. But you got Revis, and then I think you got Wilkerson and Richardson, two young guys on the defensive line to build around. That if you, in a couple of years, with a really good quarterback, they could be a winning team.
Right.
But to me, I look at this team, I just think it's a win now or win next year kind of team.
So you're basically saying with all this talent, you might as well get it. Basically, with all this talent, why would you have a quarterback on your team that is not going to lead you to a Super Bowl?
Exactly.
It makes sense. It makes sense. And I guess in a way, so are you saying you would make a trade for Sam Bradford and do something with the Eagles, or you would just say draft Mariota? Because then if you draft Mariota, he's not going to be ready for the season.
Yeah.
If they're in a win-now mode, what do you do with that? You're just stockpiling him and you're keeping him on the bench for next year, which I'm fine with.
If you could trade for Bradford,
yeah,
and get some picks back, then to me it's just an easy decision. You make that trade. That being said, I think a Foles trade would have made a lot more sense.
Yeah.
And I don't think the Eagles traded for Bradford to trade. I just don't understand why with that cap hit. I don't think that would make a lot of sense. Not that they don't want Mariota. I do think Chip Kelly would like Mariota. But that being said also, if I'm the Jets, I don't take Mariota. I take a pass rusher. I take probably a pass rusher. For the Jets. Kind of a defensive end, outside linebacker type player. Where they have, because I have Richardson and Wilkerson, but they're more they're great against the run. They're great against their pass rushers also, but they're more not the outside linebacker 3-4
right.
type of pass rushing.
So
linebacker.
Kind of team up with Calvin Pace.
Exactly.
Interesting. And you just brought up the Eagles, which sparked a huge something really big in my head because I just don't understand what they're doing with this offseason. And I'm going to backtrack a little bit because I like the LeSean McCoy trade. Kiko Alonso is getting paid $900,000 this year compared to LeSean McCoy getting paid $8 million. Of course, having a linebacker is much more valuable to a running back. Mm-hmm. I like that trade. The Bradford Foles trade, I don't understand. Foles is Bradford could be a good quarterback, but he gets injured all the time. Over the past two seasons, he's played a total of 7 games. And Chip Kelly likes a quarterback that can run. And I know Nick Foles can't run, but Sam Bradford really can't run, especially compared to Nick Foles. Not to mention, if they start Sam Bradford for 8 games, I think it was 8 games or more this year. It may be just 8 games. Whatever. If they play Sam Bradford for half the season, they have to give the St. Louis Rams a second-round pick in next year's draft. I figured it would be the opposite, where the Rams need to, have to give the Eagles a second-round pick. So I don't understand that Foles for Bradford trade, and I never will. It'd be one thing if they did the trade to get some draft picks and to maybe get a linebacker, to get a cornerback that some teams want. If they want to trade up to like the 1-3 spots to grab Marcus Mariota, because we all know Chip Kelly loves him. But they didn't even do that. I don't understand it, Andrew.
I am with you completely. I do not understand, Eric. But here's what I'll say. Chip Kelly took over the personnel and all – basically all the general managing duties for the Philadelphia Eagles.
He's basically the Bill Belichick.
He is exactly that. And here's and if it works out, everyone's going to be shaking their head and be like, wow, this guy's a genius.
Right.
For now on, we're not going to question him. If it doesn't, he's probably going to lose his job, right?
It's a big risk. I would say so. But then again, here's where it kind of plays into Chip's favor. Because if they trade for Marcus Mariota, right? Mm-hmm. Chip Kelly is the best coach for Marcus Mariota.
Without a question. And the system, without a question. Best situation for both.
So if the Eagles go 4-12 this year, they go 4-12 next year, they're not with Marcus Mariota, they're not going to fire Chip Kelly because he is the correct coach for Marcus Mariota. You know what I mean? So Kelly, in a way, if they get Marcus Mariota, it's kind of saving Chip Kelly his job for the next 2-3 seasons. So, I mean, if you're Chip Kelly, you're not going to make a trade for that reason. You're going to make a trade to make your team better. But it's kind of a factor here in this Marcus Mariota trade because it's not just for the Philadelphia Eagles, but it could be for Chip Kelly's job security as well.
That's an interesting point. I see where you're coming from. And look, we both would agree that that's not why he's doing these moves.
Not.
And if he trades for Mariota, that's not why. But that's a good point. And, you know, I actually never thought about that. That's really interesting.
Yeah, and listen, for the Eagles, we all know how that franchise is, you know, has gone through their tough times and how their fan base is starving for a winner. I mean, the Eagles fan base. I went to school in Philly. I'm a Giant fan. It was hard for me going there. So many Eagle fans. I'm just going to be honest. I don't like them. they're crazy, but in a good way. I mean, they're very passionate about their fan base. So if they win, they're so happy, and Chip Kelly is going to be a hero there, just like Mike Schmidt is, just like Dick Vermeil kind of is, bringing that team to the 1980 Super Bowl. So, yeah, Chip Kelly can either be a hero or he could be a zero, and it's a wait-and-see approach with him. But then again, you're not going to be able to judge this Chip Kelly trade and judge really Chip Kelly's tenure in Philadelphia for, I would say, at least 2-3 seasons.
You're not. No, I agree with that. It's not just this. What happens this next season. That's a very good point. So the Jets make the big splashes. Revis back. Jets fans, including myself, we all love that. Darrell Revis is a fan favorite. Cromartie back, Gilchrist in, Marshall in, Harvin, Chris Johnson gone. Jets seem to have improved on paper tremendously this offseason.
Yep.
Giants, Shane Vereen move, I like it. I wonder if he'll be as effective as he was when playing with Tom Brady. But I think that will give Eli another weapon. I think. But the Giants were not – they have a lot of work to do. We've talked about that. They have a lot of holes. It's been an interesting offseason. It's not over yet, but up to this point, I completely agree with what you said earlier in the program, Eric. The Jets have won this offseason. It's been great.
How fun was Tuesday? Also, 4:00 p.m. As soon as NFL free agency started, it was just like,
oh my
bam,
God.
Everything happened. You heard about that news with the Eagles and with the Rams, and you were shaking your head, going like, what's going on? You mm-hmm. heard about that trade with Brandon Marshall. I would say from 4:00 to 5:00, or maybe it was from 3 to 4. I'm not sure, but that first hour of NFL free agency was awesome.
It was I can't remember anything like it. It was incredible. It really was.
Yeah.
And it's almost like everyone wanted to sign. Everyone wanted to decide where they're going and what they're doing right away. And yeah. It was just a chain reaction. One team did this, the other team responds. The Dolphins get Sue, the Jets respond with Revis, what, maybe the next day.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
That Sue contract is insane also.
It is.
Then again, it's worth it because to have a defensive lineman who's so good like Sue – or is it Sue? Sue?
Sue.
Sue? All right. I was getting confused. Yeah, to have a great offensive lineman like Sue, though they're paying him $50 million, he's worth every single –
he's the best defensive tackle in the league by far.
And you also have to remember NFL contracts mean nothing except for the guarantee. team money.
Exactly.
So if a guy is getting a contract for 6 years, $100 million, and it's a $12 million guaranteed money, then the team can cut him the year after if he doesn't do great. So keep that in mind when your team signs a big free agent.
Oh, definitely. No, that's a good point. Yeah. It's not like Major League Baseball where you have to pay A-Rod his whole contract.
Yeah.
Not at all. Speaking of A-Rod, Eric, let's go over the Yankees. And there's one thing that this is about a week old maybe now, this news. But with Mark Teixeira complaining, and a few of the other Yankees complaining about sharing the Yankee Stadium with the new MLS team, NYCFC, who I think played there tonight.
Yeah.
I don't really follow MLS at all.
Yeah, either.
all right, so let's move past soccer. Mark Teixeira said he spoke out about it, saying it really sucks, something like that. I'm paraphrasing that. It really sucks. It's going to tear up the infield.
I can't blame him. I agree.
I don't disagree, but don't you think Mark Teixeira should be worrying about getting his on-base percentage up to .350 and getting his batting average from .200 maybe to .250 and worry about playing baseball instead of worrying about the soccer field?
Or of course.
You know, I mean, it's like, you know, worry about what you can control. Why are you even talking about Yankee Stadium field right now? You know, you should be worrying on your – and getting back to a $20 million player level.
I see his point about the field.
I know.
Especially if it kind of like chips up the infield, chips up the dirt like that, especially the pitcher's mound. Think about how weird that's going to be. They're going to have to I'm not too sure how Yankee Stadium is going to be with the soccer field, what direction they're going in. But if they have to shovel out all the dirt from the pitcher's mound every single time that the soccer team plays there and then put it back in, I feel like it's gonna be weird. I mean, I feel like not for Teixeira, but for the pitchers.
I don't disagree with you, but I have to believe that the Yankees, they have the grounds crew, they have the people that are aware, that have done their research, that know what they're doing. They're not going to decide that to do this if it's really going to affect the Yankees on the field.
Yeah, right.
All right, and I also assume, I don't know this for sure, that they have scheduled the soccer games and the home series for the Yankees in a way where you have a couple of days in between.
Yeah,
I would assume
there are. So it is like that. And there's only a select number of home games for soccer. I think there's like 15 home games throughout the season. They play the entirety of the baseball season, though. It goes from March all the way until October, I think.
Oh,
so
really?
It's going to be going on all summer. And, but then again, you know, they're smart enough. They're not scheduling a baseball game on a Sunday and then a soccer game on a Monday. So, yeah, they're smart about it. But then again, going back to your point about Teixeira, this is a big year for him. This is the sixth year of his contract, right? Mm-hmm. 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. All right, so he's got two more years of that eight-year deal. It's a big year for him, and he's got to stay healthy, too. I want to see – listen, I know what Teixeira's done the past couple of years. I want to see .245 average. I'd be fine with that. .245 average. Give me 23 homers and give me 85 ribbies. I'll take it. Is that too low?
Well, I mean
– or is that too high?
I don't know. I mean, first of all, I'm not a big batting average guy. I'm more of like I've kind of in the new age on base percentage, slugging percentage, OPS, all that stuff. But, okay, OPS, which is on base plus slugging, last year he hit – his OPS was .711. The year before that it was .609, and he barely played the 15 games. But before that, .807, .835, .846, .948, 1.081. And this is a guy that has gone from a superstar level to – an average hitter. So when I look at Mark Teixeira, I don't really care about the batting average, but I want him to at least hit 25 home runs.
Yeah, you want to see the power.
You want to see the power.
He hit 22 homers last year.
He did. And his power numbers were pretty good last year. I mean, for a while, early in the year, he had his home runs per bat rate was among the best in baseball. It's just because he was always out of the lineup.
Yeah.
If he stays healthy, he'll hit home runs. Because look, when he goes up at the plate, all he's trying to do is hit home run. He just, you know, he swings for the fences.
Short fence at Yankee Stadium, that's what happens. It's also crazy if you look at the infields of the Yankees and see how much it's transformed over the past, like, 3-4 years. Because you look 3-4 years ago, Teixeira at first base, and he was slugging like 40 homers, driving in 130 ribbies a year. Second base, Robbie Cano, we all know what he did. And then you had Jeter and A-Rod. Now you have an older Mark Teixeira. You have Steven Drew at second base, who is god-awful, in my opinion. Okay,
fielder,
but whatever.
Oh, he's
Gregorius, who is no Derek Jeter. And then you got Chase Headley, who I think is a solid player. But it's amazing how that infield has changed over the past 3-4 years.
It really is. It went from, like you said, it was, if not the best infield in baseball, it was the second best.
Arguably ever?
It was. It really was incredible. I mean, with Cano, Jeter, A-Rod, it really was incredible. And now it's either old and injured, or young and unproven.
Or a great defensive guy, and he can't hit for a lick. So it's one of those three right there, but it's nothing what it used to be.
Not at all. And the Yankees' offense overall is just it's not going to be good. If the Yankees are going to be a good team this year, if they're going to make the playoffs, their pitching is going to carry them.
What is your – if the Yankees won 89 games, would you be happy?
I'd be ecstatic. Really? I mean, 89 games, first of all, it's probably going to make the playoffs. I look at the American League and I see a lot of parity. So I think you'll have a lot of 85, 86 win teams. The Yankees won 89 games. I think most Yankee fans would be happy, and I think the Yankees organization themselves would be jumping for joy.
All right. This is the end of our program. Thank you guys for listening. Sports Talk 1240 on this Sunday night, March 15th. You got St. Patrick's Day right around the corner on Tuesday. A very special thank you to our engineer, Brian Graves, Andrew Joseph, across from me, Eric Getzoff, telling everybody to drive safely. Have a great rest of your night and have a great week as well. You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB.
Views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.